Colectivo Raíces presenta su programa
Espejos de Aztlán.
Información,
arte,
cultura.
Bienvenidos.
Bienvenidos a su programa Espejos de Aztlán. Welcome to your show Mirrors of Aztlán. Hoy lunes 21 de julio, esta tarde tenemos un especial invitado. You might know his work from posters highlighting with his brush the everyday life of New Mexico's past or his Chicano activism, especially concerning literacy. One of the state's largest elementary schools is named after him, a veteran of the Vietnam War returning home with the need to bring beauty and light against the darkness in the world throughout his art. He's the recipient of the 2013 Governor's Award for Excellence in the Arts. Edward Gonzalez talks with us today from his studio in Bernalillo. My name is Cristina Bachín. We are in Edward Gonzalez's studio this afternoon. Thank you, Edward, for letting us come to your art temple, I could say, this new art temple you are inaugurating or beginning to work on.
Oh, yes, thank you. I'm very happy to be here to talk to you a little bit about my art.
I have been seeing your works since I came to Albuquerque, and one of my first questions I usually wonder is, you have a particular paint which is through a child's eyes. During your childhood, what did you see? What were the colors you remember from that time?
My earliest memories of being cognizant of art, that is, of the visual world, was when I was about 4 years old. And it was my grandma who was babysitting me, and she really woke me up by bringing some colored pencils and some blank paper for me to work with at the age of around four. And those are my earliest memories. This material woke me up to being visual, and I believe it was a turning point in my life, because then I started recognizing the world in a very visual way, the colors, the beauty of the light, and the blue of the sky and the white clouds, and it was almost like I was on some psychedelic trip. And my grandmother, she did that because I was bothering her. You know, I had a younger brother that she was taking care of while my parents worked. And just to keep me quiet, she brought those color pencils in a little comic book of, she called it Pato Loco, and a Daffy Duck comic book. And I started copying that book, and I was there over 2 hours, really quiet, and she was wondering why I was so quiet, you know, and then she saw what I was doing. And she was amazed that I could copy each page almost verbatim, you know, including the little captions and the bubbles. And of course, I didn't know what it said, but I copied all the words too. So she was really shocked that I could, at that age, could do something like that. And so she was my first fan. She really, to get grandma Ramirez's attention and her admiration was really difficult because she was pretty tough Mexicana from Querétaro, you know. there was a no-nonsense character to her. So I was really, really impressed by her attention that she gave to me.
Blue, azul, rojo, red. You have been in all these years developing different topics. Since I came to Albuquerque, I have seen your images until I knew you were the one who was painting those ones, that there is a deep concern about literacy. Why is that topic so present in your work?
Well, I believe it's from personal experience. I do recognize also that there are a lot of Chicano and Hispano activists that are very much supportive of literacy, and I think it's probably the same reason, is that they experienced a lot of prejudice in the public school systems when they were growing up. My mother always talked about spending 3 years in the first grade because she couldn't speak English. And a closer experience, my brother, who's a year older, who's now a professor at UNM, he went to school at San Jose, at East San Jose, the only school that had a program for Spanish-speaking kids. The only trouble is that he didn't know Spanish, he knew English. And so they thought that he was mentally deficient because he wasn't operating well in a Spanish-speaking classroom. And so he had that reverse experience. My mother was trying to prepare us for the English-speaking world. And when she did, and he went to school, then he was confronted with kind of a reverse discrimination, which was kind of funny. In a way that because he couldn't speak Spanish, they thought because they wanted to teach him English, but he knew English better than they did. So it was kind of a crazy upside down world. So all these issues have to do with how the Hispanic population, the Chicano population, is perceived by the outer world. And so literacy was particularly important because I really value the ability to teach yourself an education as well as learn it in school.
One of the state's largest elementary schools is named after you. What does it mean for you?
It's like almost 100 years of solitude. It's a surreal.
Es como el libro Cien Años de Soledad.
It's a surreal experience to have a school named after you. I sometimes joke to my friends that it's a way of keeping me well-mannered and with the ability to get along in this world, you know. But I think it's a tremendous honor and a privilege that I'm the only artist, at least living artist, that a school is named after. Really, really proud of that.
Pintas angelitos bellos. Oh, you have a long and deep Hispanic heritage and a Latino heritage. You have been deeply involved in the Chicano movement, and now you are also a Hispanic veteran of Vietnam War. How all this social commitment, all this social activism, inform your work?
Social activism was important, and I became politically aware when I went to UNM as a student and was participated in protests. And with the idealism of creating a better world for Chicanos and actually creating institutions, because there were none at that time in the 60s, I had in mind as an artist that I needed to do something, you know, to be strident. But at the same time, I was very concerned about my aesthetics, my artistic direction as well. And I decided I wasn't really that interested in mural painting, which was sort of a model for Chicano artists at that time, you know, the Diego Rivera, Frida Kahlo model of art. In a way, I rejected it because I wanted to do something that reached a large audience, and I wasn't sure that doing barrio murals would reach a large audience. And so I started creating art of the individual, the art of, I guess, the Chicano experience in New Mexico that goes back historically as well. And so I wanted to capture the spirit of what it is and was like to be Mexican-American and from New Mexico as well, because I thought that it is a more universal experience. Our experience in New Mexico is similar to Chicanos in California and in Texas. I think we're more alike than we are different, even though there are a lot of people who don't think so.
Yes, one of my questions I thought I could ask to you is, there is some kind of unique style or distinction that we can describe about Latino or Hispanic art in New Mexico in comparison with others?
Terminology, you run into a lot of confrontation when you use the terminology, you know, the word Latino, Chicano, mm-hmm. Hispanic, Hispano, Indo-Hispano, and it goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. But I think we're all talking about the same person, same type of people, the Latino world. You know, New Mexico is an example of where the U.S. came to us. We didn't come to them. But at the same time, it's like one of the earliest experiences of the Latino world being plopped down into the Anglo world, into the Anglo-American world. And it doesn't change us because we're part of that Latino experience, you know. We're just legally American. But what does that mean? I mean, it means that we've experienced a lot of prejudice, even though we're legally American. We have that legacy of accommodation and confrontation, and it continues to this day, especially with our border issue right now. It's accommodation and confrontation and accommodation, and a lot of bias against Latinos because, you know, let's face it, the Anglo world, there are a lot of biases against Latinos, you know, because of our backgrounds, because long-standing issues remain, and it causes wars, you know. Catholic versus Protestant, mestizo versus pure bloods, you know.
If there is anybody, pure blood.
Right. So, anyway, I just recognize that I'm a Mexican-American operating in my own world here in New Mexico. New Mexico is like a little nation that's almost separate and apart from other parts of the country, because you go into a grocery store and you see people that look like you, you know, and you don't feel uncomfortable. Whereas, you know, you go into another state somewhere where you're a real minority and you start getting followed around.
As a suspect.
Right.
Is that part of the inspiration of your last work?
Well, I think there's two threads that follow in my work, and one is going back to Through the Eyes of a Child. The whole idea of capturing beauty has been a whole part of my direction, my motivation. Coming back from the war in Vietnam, I saw how ugly it was, you know, getting drafted and going to a war that very few people understood or even to this day know why it escalated so badly. And so when I went there, I did my duty, you know, I didn't shirk from it. I did my guard duty, I did my convoys, I did my my other things I won't talk about, and now get me the heck out of here so I can go back and do what I was meant to do.
Well, you know,
and so
we were on patrol and got ambushed. I still had this idea of creating beauty. I saw the ugliness of life. And so the beauty and what our place is in the Latino world with that beauty, you know, to continue it.
For the Bob Hope Show, so the people with the good office jobs can see him. Don't you dare say any of this to Mom, okay? If she only knew how many times I've gotten shot at, she'd flip. You know, in a way, I can hardly wait to tell you my war stories. I can't wait to go home and not be scared.
You found yourself on a beach in the night with dudes from Texas, Corrido.
All that ugly time, it was like the darkness versus the light and the beauty. Was that a deepest contrast on which you work more after being drafted in the Vietnam War?
Well, art in a way was my therapy, my escape from, I guess you would call it, the chaos. World politics, the craziness of going from Fort Gordon, Georgia to Fort Dix, New York, and then to Alaska, and then flying all the way down to Guam, and then to Vietnam. Yeah. What's a little Chicano, local Chicano to think when the government is doing stuff like that? So art, in a way, maybe it was an escape from that, but at the same time, it's a way of creating your own world, you know, a way of creating some sanity and a search for some sense of aesthetic beauty and attractiveness.
Talking about how art can be a healing process, sometimes I heard that it's more important the process of creation than the product. How is for you all this process of working, since you are amazingly productive? What is more important?
I have to be more disciplined, I know, because I have a number of styles that I like to operate in and out of. And as I get older, I'm narrowing it down, I think, because I love art and I love the painting process. I love to try out different techniques. And the subject matter a lot of times has determined how I paint it, how I see it. I see it sometimes differently, you know, sometimes realist, sometimes expressionist, sometimes impressionist. And so my process a lot of times is governed by the subject matter and what and how I perceive it at the time. That's why you're not going to see me doing one giant head after another, or a horse's behind over and over again, you know. I'm not that type of artist. I'm trying to capture the spirit of the subject and imbue the painting with its own spirit. It sounds a little spooky, but when a painting's on the wall, I feel like it should speak to the viewer on its own and not be some trademark type of painting that says, oh, that's so-and-so's paintings. I know right away because I want the painting to say something before it says it's this artist's work.
Azul, rojo, red, so many colors inside my head. Blue, azul, rojo, red, so many colors inside my head. En mi mente, tantos colores en mi mente.
I have seen your latest works on your website about the protesters and the police. What did inspire you, this change of style? If you can just describe a little bit, as if somebody who is listening is blind.
Yeah, the mob scenes that I was painting, protesters and counter-protesters reminded me so much of Francisco Goya's bullring paintings, where there's tremendous chaos. You know, the bull's coming in and the crowd moves over this way, or Pamplona, you know. And so I was watching these protests on television, you know, in Ukraine. And they're right in the middle of this beautiful old Baroque town, city. But these crowds were moving. And I said, gee, I'd like to do that. I'd like to emulate what Goya was trying to do, is to create this chaos among this tremendous crowd. That was my thinking, you know. That's why I'm saying maybe I need to be a little more disciplined, but I just go off.
Fortunately, I'm not so much, because this is a complete different thing, and it's beautiful that it came up. It's like blooming some dark side of our humankind. Yeah. So,
but I like the anonymity of the crowd. You know, I guess I might say that crowds act as one organic thing. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I was seeking to capture in the crowd. I know people get hurt and killed and everything else, but the crowds themselves, you know. I guess I'm not different from a lot of other artists. Like, I had an artist friend who just was captivated by forest fires. He thought they were beautiful. You know. And so in this way, crowds can be kind of intriguing, you know, as a visual painting.
Can you describe to our listeners these last two works, the one that is in process and the one we are seeing just right now in our in this studio?
Okay.
What's the title of it?
Yes, these paintings are portraits of four children on a couch, and it's a depiction of from WPA, you know, Works Progress Administration, photos of the 1930s, where photographers were going around photographing poor people, and these kids were photographed by Russell Lee, and are in the photo archives. But I hark back to those photo archives a lot because they're in the public domain. And a lot of the photos of Mexicans and Mexican Americans are ignored. And I wanted to bring this painting to the forefront because these kids are living in a cardboard box, and they live on the outskirts of San Antonio, you know. And so I just thought that there was so much of a recognition of these children as to what's going on now with the border issues and women and children who are fleeing. You know, it's like here you have a real treasure. You have the treasure of any community, any city, any country being squandered through poverty. And I feel the same way about the border kids and families there. These are the healthiest, strongest of their nation, and they're leaving. These are the treasures of their nation, and they're leaving because they're threatened. Their very lives are threatened, and they see some hope in the United States, you know. So that was my motivation to do these paintings. It just kind of shows, like, since the 1930s, things haven't changed much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Eduard Gonzalez, for letting us come into this, that I would call it an art temple. I like to be in the backstage of it. And thank you for sharing your time with us, with Espejos de Aztlán.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
and you were listening an interview with New Mexican painter Edward Gonzalez from his studio in Bernalillo. If you want to look for more information, you can go online at his website, edwardgonzalez.com. My name is Cristina Bachin for today's Espejos de Aztlán. I want also to send our condolences to the family of Tomás Atencio, pionero y luchador por los derechos de los latinos, profesor de sociología de la Universidad de Nuevo México y fundador de la Academia de la Nueva Raza, entre otros méritos. This evening we want to send our condolences to the family of Tomás Atencio, pioneer and activist for Latino human rights, University of New Mexico, sociology professor and founder of Academia de la Nueva Raza. There will be a memorial mass that will be celebrated at San Felipe de Neri Parish this Friday, July the 25th at 10 a.m. As Espejos de Aztlán, we also will have a special regarding his memory on first Monday of September. Thank you so much. My name is Cristina Bachin, and stay tuned because just right now, Raíces show for you with your host, Henry González.